The headlines: Iran and Venezuela forging their strategic bonds with a 20-year cooperation deal as President Maduro visits Tehran. In Bolivia, former President Jeanine Añez is facing 10 years in jail for her role in a plot to oust her predecessor, Evo Morales. Plus, Ukraine's military says it urgently needs Western weaponry to ward off Russian attacks in the east. And welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Bisoumi Shahmadi, and these are top stories this hour. Iran and Venezuela have pledged to forge closer cooperation on all fronts to further strengthen bilateral relations. To that aim, the presidents of the two countries have signed a 20-year cooperation deal. They have also hailed their nation's resistance against foreign pressure.
Venezuela has shown that it has put up exemplary resistance against the enemy's threats, sanctions, and imperialism. The Iranian nation, too, has been under numerous sanctions and threats for more than 40 years now. But the Iranian people have turned these sanctions into an opportunity to further make progress.
President Raisi and his Venezuelan counterpart said that the two countries should work together to closely in areas such as trade, economy, agriculture, as well as science and technology. They also hailed the establishment of direct Tehran-Caracas flights as an opportunity to enhance relations and bring the two nations closer together. The Venezuelan president arrived in Tehran on Friday for a two-day official visit. Political analyst Said Mustafa Khoshchishm explains how the close cooperation between Venezuela and Iran is helping them overcome their problems.
Iran rushed to Maduro's help and the Venezuelan people's help. The people were queuing lines, waiting to fill their car tanks. And Iran sent a dozen tankers, not only taking petrol to Venezuela, but also spare parts for refineries, engineers, technology, and everything, as well as additives and, to help the country come back online, bring their refineries back online. And that soothed, actually, the crisis in the country and defused the U.S. plans for overthrowing the government in there. So the two are also major oil-producing countries and could help each other with managing the global oil market as we are approaching winter, and then the energy prices are rising because of the Ukraine war, and the U.S. needs much energy imports as well as the Europeans, and they need energy, and the only two countries that might increase supplies in the market and have reserves are Venezuela and Iran, so they could play a major role in coming months with regard to energy market.
Author and journalist Arnold August joined us earlier to explain why Venezuelan president's visits to Iran is significant.
During the height of the American sanctions against Venezuela, the Iranian government courageously sent several tankers over a period of 1 or 2 years in order to assist the Venezuelan oil industry to kickstart itself. So this is just what is happening today, is a continuation of this extremely important bilateral relations between Venezuela and Iran. I think it has, there's a lot of important points. I cannot just today regarding this summit in the of the Americas. Daniel Ortega, representing the Nicaragua government, said in his country what many people perhaps were thinking but not say out loud, as he did. And he said one of the reasons that Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua were excluded from the summit by the United States was as a result of these three countries, their close ties with Russia in the current situation. I guess indirectly, it's also because of how these three countries together are working in order to try to push against U.S. hegemony in this very important period of world history.
For the second day in a row, the members of the anti-Iran terrorist group Mujahideen Khalq organization have tried to sabotage an exhibition in the Swedish capital displaying their crimes. Bianca Rahimi reports.
Members of the Mujahideen Khalq terrorist group, also known as the MKO, gathered in the Swedish capital on Friday for the second day in a row to sabotage an exhibition on the group's crimes. The Swedish police struggled to control the situation, with MKO members spreading out, running down the streets away from the place designated for the protest and harassing Press TV's reporters and camera crew. On Thursday, several members of the MKO were arrested for attacking the exhibition and throwing objects, including paint, at the exhibition and public property. The organizer of the expo, the Harbilion NGO, say the police tried to sabotage the event by refusing to allow banners to be put up and denying journalists adequate security, despite them having the necessary permits. The MKO has conducted numerous assassinations and bombings against Iranian statesmen and civilians since the 1979 victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Its members fled Iran in 1986 to Iraq, where they enjoyed backing from former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. MKO terrorists enjoy freedom of activity and movement in the US and Europe, and even hold regular meetings in which European and American officials make speeches.
The organizers of this event say that the MKO has protested in the Swedish capital for 90 days straight with government security. This suggests that this organization feels safe and protected here in Sweden. Bianca Rahimi, Stockholm.
Former Bolivian President Janine Anez has been sentenced to jail for orchestrating a coup that brought her to power during the 2019 political crisis. The court has ruled that the 54-year-old will serve 10 years in a woman's prison in La Paz. This comes more than a year after she was arrested for an alleged plot to oust her predecessor Evo Morales. Anez was convicted of making decisions contrary to the Bolivian constitution. She had already announced that she would appeal to international legal bodies if convicted. But Anez still faces a separate pending court case for sedition and other charges. The former army and police heads are also facing 10 years jail terms each, but both are currently on the run. Members of Iraq's Sadr movement have resigned from parliament as the country fails to form a new government nearly 8 months after the elections. The Sadr movement secured 73 seats in the October parliamentary elections. That was the greatest number of seats won by a party, but it fell short of 165-seat majority needed to form the government. The Sadr movement has formed an alliance with the Kurdistan Democratic Party and other parties to form a coalition, but the movement has failed to find common ground with its rival coordination framework. Meanwhile, Ukraine is asking the West for more weapons as Russia steps up attacks in the east more than 3 months into the war there. Ukrainian military officials say they are outgunned by the more powerful Russian army. They say they need more advanced Western weapons, including rocket systems, to fend off Russian artillery attacks. Moscow has been focusing its firepower in the eastern Donbass region over the past few weeks, with the fiercest battles taking place in Severodonetsk, an industrial city in Luhansk province. Ukrainians have largely pulled out of the city's residential areas, but they are still putting up resistance against Russian advance from the north and the south. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russia is trying to break every town in Donbass. Staying with Ukraine, the country is also calling for more humanitarian aid as the health situation worsens in the city of Mariupol. Major port cities into Russian hands in May. According to officials there, dead bodies and rubbish remain uncollected in the streets. That adds to a poor sanitation system broken by weeks of fighting, causing water to mix with sewage. Now Mariupol's mayor says that they have identified cases of dysentery, cholera, and other infectious diseases. The city has been closed off to avoid a larger outbreak that could take thousands of lives. The United Nations has also warned that Mariupol is at risk of a major cholera outbreak. The fallout of the Russia-Ukraine war continues to take a heavy toll on U.S. economy. U.S. stocks fell sharply as the country's inflation surges to a new four-decade high record. The New York Stock Exchange saw Dow Jones Industrial Average, the broad-based S&P 500, and the tech-rich NASDAQ Composite Index all tumble. It came after the Labor Department said the Consumer Price Index surged by 8.6% in May compared to the same period last year. Now, this is unseen since 1981. The figure exceeds all forecasts and comes as gasoline prices are hitting records every single day in the U.S. as the war in Ukraine drags on. Prices also continued to rise last month for a range of other goods, including housing, groceries, airline fares, and vehicles. The U.S. and China ramp up a war of words over Taiwan, a self-ruled island that China considers as part of its territory. The Pentagon chief has accused the Chinese military of provocative, destabilizing activities near Taiwan. Lloyd Austin has told a security summit in Singapore that there is growing coercion from Beijing. On Friday, Chinese Defense Minister Wei Fenghe says that his country did not hesitate and would not hesitate a war if Taiwan declares independence. The same day, the two officials met on the sidelines of the summit to discuss global, regional, and bilateral security issues. Their talks largely focus on Taiwan. Beijing is opposed to Washington's growing military and diplomatic ties with the country. Recently, President Joe Biden also angered China after he vowed to defend Taiwan militarily if attacked. People across Iran are marking the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, the 8th Shia Imam. Thousands of Iranians and foreign pilgrims are also in the city of Mashhad to pay respect to the Imam. In the northeastern city, the holy shrine of Imam Reza, who is considered a symbol of divine love and affection, ceremonies include special prayers, poetry reading, and other performances. There was a ceremony that was held by the Scientific and Cultural Organization of Imam Reza's Holy Shrine. This year's events send a strong message to Islamophobes around the world, with Muslims pledging not to remain silent on the insults against their beliefs and sacred religious figures.
Thousands of Iranian Muslims have come together in capital Tehran to celebrate the birth anniversary of Imam Reza, the 8th infallible Shia Imam. People from different walks of life took part in the ceremony to pay respect to the lofty status of Imam Reza, who is considered by Iranians as a symbol of divine love and affection.
I'm here to say that we love Imam Reza from the bottom of our hearts. I have raised my children with a love for Imam Reza. We are ready to die for him, and we will continue his path.
The ceremony comes almost 10 days after France awarded a movie titled Holy Spider during the Cannes Film Festival, which Muslims believed insulted Islamic sanctities.
Iranian officials believe that awarding the movie Holy Spider is insulting and politically motivated and is the product of the confused mind of a Danish-Iranian filmmaker, sponsored and financed by Global Arms.
People strongly condemn the move by France, saying such a sacrilegious act will never be forgotten.
I want to send this message to the enemies that the light of the sun will never fade away, so the name and the path of Imam Reza will remain forever and the enemies' plots will never bear any results.
The participants believe that the large gathering of Muslim believers has sent this message to the enemies of Islam, that Muslims will never remain silent and indifferent towards any insult against their sanctities, and they are ready to defend their Islamic values and beliefs until the last drop of their blood. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
A mix of Shia, Sunni, and Sufi scholars have gathered in the English city of Birmingham to condemn the release of a divisive film, The Lady of Heaven, produced by a notorious hate preacher. The move is intended to counter sectarianism and educate against misleading mainstream media narratives surrounding the film. Robert Carter reports.
Amid nationwide Muslim protests against the controversial Lady of Heaven movie, British scholars gathered in Birmingham to condemn the hateful message. Representatives from the Shia, Sunni and Sufi Islamic schools of thought signed a joint statement, slamming the film as divisive and sectarian.
The recently released film, The Lady of Heaven, has incited sectarian tension amongst Muslims for its offensive depiction of early Muslim history. We strongly and without reservation condemn its writer Yasir al-Habib for this contemptible action.
Released in British theatres on June the 3rd, the film attempts to depict the life and death of Fatima Zahra, the daughter of beloved Islamic prophet Muhammad. However, offensive depictions of the prophet's wife and companions sparked protests. Following the backlash, British media adopted the narrative of the movie's writer, notorious hate preacher Yasser Habib, portraying the protests as a Sunni-Shia conflict.
What's happening is, it's essentially, it's a sectarian thing. So it's not like some people have come along and made this offensive movie about Muhammad.
Yeah.
It's what it is a Shia-Sunni situation.
What the media totally missed, however, is the significant Shia-Muslim opposition.
I need to be able to put your feelings even ahead of mine. Yes. I need to prefer you to my own self and understand that the words that I use and the historical underpinnings that I have may offend you, and thus I need to be able to put your peace of mind, peace of heart, even ahead of myself.
After spending the day here, it's become absolutely clear to us that the divisive and sectarian narrative that's been adopted by the British mainstream media is totally false. However, the question is, will the British mainstream adopt these types of events in their coverage, or will they continue to peddle the divisive narrative that's being put out there by the producers of this sectarian film? Robert Carter, Birmingham.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
aperture.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit. But behind this resounding success lies a dark secret: toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. A prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-block. This is where all the medical tests and the human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, I'm about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on, like, two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would put the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, their new toxic products reach the market. These multinationals all have one thing in common: a culture of secrecy.
They're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. In the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry.
Everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, and it was secure.
Are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action: lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world, if they would have informed us back then, that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't have bite it up.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day. Okay. So
all day long, people were coming in?
Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This material is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland. The birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin, levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, the company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow was acting in its own interests, so Dow was trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life here, near the river. This is where she raised her family.
Oh, this is where we used to have the zip line way back here.
Okay.
We used to have all trails that went down through here. I don't even know if you can see any of them over here. But 18 years and the land is very fertile, and it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just, you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore, and they could build forts, and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Buchelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Buchelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007. When tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency, the levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
My oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have 5 kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. Some to a lesser degree, and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Buchelter, was a doctor. A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. the results of my husband's. This is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Buchelder's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, three times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died. And would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards like Alice Buchelder's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Shuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there is no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They are dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Schwan shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. Up to 3 kilometers from the factory, 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells, like in Shakya's family home. They've lived in this house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar, a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011, but for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. I would like to begin this episode with a question. Who was the first person, the very first person who rebelled against Allah? Who was he? You all know. The first person who transgressed and crossed the limits was Shaitan, Satan. He refused to submit to Allah. He rebelled him when, of course, Allah wanted him to obey him. But he rebelled. Shaitan was a good creature in the beginning. He was worshipping Allah. He was submissive. But when Allah put him to a serious test by asking him to show his respect to Adam, he stubbornly refused. He said, "Because I am much better than Adam, Who the heck is Adam? I'm not going to bow to Adam. خلقتني من نار وخلقته من تين. So Shaitan was stubborn, Shaitan was selfish, and Shaitan was proud of himself because he was proud of having been created from fire, while man, insan, was created from mud, from clay. Okay, he was saying, okay, my race is white and his race is black. That's what we are saying nowadays. That's what we see, at least in the world. Some people say, I am European, I'm so and so. I'm not going to respect someone who is poor, who comes from so and so country. So it is all because of selfishness, because of arrogance, because of stubbornness, and because of pride. It's all because of this that he says, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to that to do that. Shaitan was very much, yes, like this. Shaitan did not submit to Allah and he did not obey Allah because he was proud. Allah the Exalted, the Almighty, says the true essence, the true act of worship, ibadah, is that when you are willing to submit to Allah. That's the main essence of ibadah. Worshipping Allah is all about submitting to Allah. Every cell in your body yearns Him, submits to Him, and worships Him. There is a verse in the Quran which says, قُلْ إِنَّ صَلَاتِي وَنُسُكِي وَمَحْيَايَ وَمَمَاتِ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Say that my prayer, my rituals, my life, and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. So that's all about, ibadah is all about submission. Okay? Not only your actions, your feelings, your aspirations, your sentiments must be directed to Allah. If you love someone, you must love him for the sake of Allah. If you hate something, you should hate for the sake of Allah. Every cell in your body submits to Allah. And that's what submission is about. That's what the religion of Islam is about. Religion has two dimensions, two sides. One is the exterior, which is very visible. Everyone can see the exterior. What is the exterior of faith? Prayers, the fasting, when you don't eat and drink, the Hajj, the charity that you give, and the jihad. These are the exterior of the religion, the outward aspect of the religion, okay? But the interior of Islam and the essence of Islam is the submission to Allah. The inner faith and belief in Islam, which is invisible to the eyes, that is the true essence. The true essence of Islam is submission. And you have to believe that when it comes to Allah, you are nothing but subservient to Allah, the Almighty. You submit to Allah willfully, truly, utterly, and completely. And you are subservient to Allah with all your heart, body, and soul.
We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
is Allah satisfied.
Man reaches a degree of belief where he declares his nothingness before Allah. That is the true faith. That is the true faith. This is how you measure your faith. This is a scale on which you put your faith and you measure it. Okay? And you see whether you really have faith. And if you have faith, do you have 50% faith, complete faith, or incomplete faith? Or you have no faith at all? Okay? In fact, this is the essence. This is the meaning of love. When you love someone, you are prepared to do everything for him. You are willing to do everything for him. If he tells you to call him before going to bed, you call him. If he tells you to call him every 30 minutes, you call him. If he tells you to pick him from the street, you would do so. If he tells you, wait for me in the street in the cold, you will definitely do it, as people do it. We can see it. If he tells you to wait for him in the road and it's raining, you will do that. You will never say no to him because you love that person. Prophet Sulaiman saw an ant in the desert carrying some dust from one end to another. Sulaiman, who had the ability of communicating with animals and insects, said, "What are you doing there?" The ant said, "I'm carrying dust from this side to the other side." He said, "Why are you doing this?" She said, "I am in love. I am in deep love with someone who asked me to do so, and I'm just listening to him." Sulaiman said to her, "But the dust here is too much, and this is a big mountain of dust. You will not be able to carry all the dust even if you live the life of Noah. Are you going to spend all your life doing this? You are going to die soon or late. You cannot do that." She said to him, "Ya Sulaiman, dying in the way of love and in the line of duty towards someone you love is much better and comforting for you." "Yes, even if I die, it does not matter because I'm dying for him." Sulaiman received the message that even in our death, we have to die for our Lord, the Glorified. قُلْ إِنَّ صَلَاتِي وَنُسُكِي وَمَحْيَايَ وَمَمَاتِ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Of course, not only your activities and prayers, but your death should also be for him. Your life and death, your beginning and your end should be for him. That is the true essence of faith. We live for Allah and completely submit to him. فَلَا وَرَبَّكَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ حَتَّى يُحَكِّمُوكَ فِي مَا شَجَرْ بَيْنَهُمْ ثُمَّ لَا يَجِدُوا فِي أَنفُسِهِمْ حَرَجًا مِمَّا قَضَيْتَ وَيَسَلِّمُوا تَسْلِيمًا. But no, by your Lord, they do not believe in reality until they make you a judge of that which has become a matter of disagreement among them. And this is the translation of the verse. And then do not find any straightness in their hearts as to what you have decided, and submit with entire submission. And that's the end of this episode. Inshallah, we will carry on this discussion. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. So I need. So I need. All I need. Oh, oh, oh,
oh. Your love is all I need. To be all I need. And I know that you see how much you need to me. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need. To be all I can be. And I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.